Kakako. Welcome to Kauai Community Radio's Talk Story. Talk Story, Vala'o in Hawaiian, translates loosely as reminiscing and communicating. Today, we will hear from one of Hawaii's premier musicians, Keola Maikalani Breckenridge Deshay Beamer. This singer-songwriter, arranger, and slack key guitarist can trace his roots to the 15th century descendants of King Kamehameha I and Queen Ahia Kumaikiekie. In more recent generations, the Beamer's musical legacy has been well established. Keola's great-grandmother, Helen Deshay Beamer, was a prolific and accomplished singer-songwriter and a skilled dancer of hula. Keola's grandfather, Pono Beamer, was also a celebrated composer. His mother, Winona, is a well-known chanter and teacher of hula and Hawaiiana. In Hawaii, it is chant, or oli, and hula kahiko, which connects the generations. In high school and college, Keola studied classical guitar, then found his passion for teaching and composing melodies for Hawaiian slack key guitar, or kiho'alu. Keola developed and published a method book complete with tablature for Hawaiian slack key. Then in 1972, he recorded his first landmark solo album, Hawaiian Slack Key Guitar in the Real Old Style, highlighting the nahe-nahe, or sweet and soft sound of the genre. Keola's strong commitment to preserving traditional musical forms helped drive what has come to be known as the Hawaiian Cultural Renaissance. And now, from our studios located on the north shore of Kauai, we are pleased to present Keola Beamer with host Manulele Clark for this intimate session of KKCR's Talk Story.
My story begins with a beautiful sound in the evening air. When I was about 9 years old, I was at a party with my parents, and I got a little bored, and I walked outside. This is in the area of Nu'uanu on the island of Oahu. I was wandering around in the backyard, and I heard this beautiful sound coming from underneath a mango tree, just down the road a bit, and it was very light and it was very beautiful, and I was attracted to it, and I walked in the evening air and I walked through the bushes and followed this path. And underneath a mango tree, there was an old Hawaiian man sitting on a Wesson oil can with his guitar, and he was making the most beautiful music I'd ever heard. It was like silk in the air. I couldn't believe how beautiful it was. And he was all by himself, and he was really enraptured in the sound of the music. He had his eyes closed, and I sat down at his feet. I made a little rustling sound in the dirt, and then he turned down and he looked at me, and he stopped playing, turned his back, and that was it. That was the end of the music. That's the way the Hawaiian slack key guitar was when I was growing up. The tunings were passed down from family member to family member. And when he looked at me, I could see him. He was studying my face. And when he realized that he didn't know me, I wasn't related to him, or I wasn't ohana, it was over. Because that's the way it was. And when you think about our culture, it turns out that the really special things that we love, the chant, the hula, the dance, a lot of these things went underground because Hawaiians had lost so much at this point in time. They lost their land. They lost their religious system. They lost their place in the universe and the things that they really cherished. You know, they began to think, every time we open ourselves up, we lose something. And pretty soon they turned around and they didn't have any land and they didn't, you know. And it was pretty sad. So these things went underground. And slack key, although a more modern invention, I mean, considered to be much more modern than our chant or our dance, but that went underground also. So there was no place to go and listen to guys play slack-key guitar. There was no place to learn how to tune your guitar to these great tunings. There was no, I mean, it was really hard. So you had to develop a sort of a personal relationship with somebody, almost like an apprentice, and help them and keep your mouth closed and don't ask too many questions. And eventually, if you were sort of worthy enough, then maybe you got to learn a little something.
Who was that for you?
For me, it was a woman, strangely enough, because there are very few women slack-key guitar players. But for some reason, Auntie Alice Namakilua liked me. You know, I was young and I was really struggling to understand, you know, my own feelings and the guitar. And she was so sweet. I remember one time my mom told me, look, you know, be nice to Auntie Alice. And, you know, by this time I was about 15 years old and I had just got my driver's license. So mom says, you know, go overtake Auntie to lunch. You know, so I drive over there in my very first car, which is this horrible sports car with a muffler dragging on the ground. And, you know, the antenna is a coat hanger, big dents in the door. And I pull up there and Auntie Alice comes out. She's got this beautiful black moo on and lace gloves and her papali, her beautiful hat, and she's walking down the stairs. I come up, oh, Auntie, you know, come, and I'm helping her down the stairs, and, she, you know, gradually she's getting closer to the car, and her eyes are getting bigger and bigger. And she said to me in Hawaiian, come back when you have a nicer car. And I couldn't blame her for that. It was pretty funny at the time. At least my mother thought it was funny till I borrowed the keys to her car. Anyway, we finally got Auntie to lunch, and then, you know, we just... our relationship developed. It was, I respected her work and I was sincere. And, you know, what's the Hawaiian sort of idea of learning? It's pa'akovaha, close your mouth, nani ke kumu, look to the source, and sort of listen and learn. Yeah. I mean, you don't pepper the kupuna with a lot of questions. You just try to be respectful and learn at their pace. So that's what I did.
Do you remember the first piece that she taught you?
Yeah, it was Auntie Alice's slack key. The kind of style that Hawaiians call nahi nahi, just real sensitive, kind of easy music, beautiful, and you kind of relax and the stress goes away at the end of the day. The actual experience of creating something began pretty young for me because I had a family that was in music and very much a part of Hawaiian music. My great-grandmother is a well-known composer in Hawaii. Her name is Helen Deshe Beamer, and she has written some of the most stunning work for orchestral voices. And, I mean, she just had this God-given talent that her songs are still very much alive today, and people interpret them and sing them all the time. She's really quite revered in Hawaii. So, you know, I had this understanding that it's possible to write music, although I'll never be able to, you know, write music as beautiful as she did. But, I mean, the understanding that, you know, people can make nice stuff occurred to me at an early age. But after a while, you begin to sort of understand that there's a craft to it. Well, let me play Punahele. That's from Tales from the Dream Guitar. Thank you. You know, we talk about Hawaiians sometimes living in two worlds, the worlds of our ancestors, who we respect and we love, and the world of today and the future. So a lot of us walk within these both worlds as, you know, moving forward in life. Same like the instruments, you know, when I hold them, the ohe or the kaikeeke or the, you know, the other instruments that we perform with, I just go backwards in time somehow. They connect me to my past, and it's just a beautiful feeling to hold those instruments and sort of slip backward in time. And when you hear them, you know, recorded beautifully, man, it's a marvelous experience because you're transported back 1,000 years in time. Really amazing. So this is the Ohe Hanuihu, and it's basically it's a bamboo tube. And there's two kind of bamboos that that are in Hawaii, but the one we like to use is the native Hawaiian bamboo, which is thin-walled. We have the Japanese one, but it's kind of thicker. So we like the thin walls, which gives it a very beautiful sound. Although the Japanese have an instrument, of course, the shakuhachi, which is drop-dead gorgeous. This is a really very primitive instrument. There's one puka, which is whole for your nose, and then three pukas for your fingers. And yes, you do play it with your nose. But there's, you know, it's kind of used in the old days. If you wanted to attract a member of the opposite sex, you could, you know, make a flute and go out behind the grass shack and, you know, hope for the best. Certainly, it's worked in my life.
That was very beautiful. Thanks. Thank you. How did it feel to be a young performer in Waikiki during the early 70s?
But those days were really fabulous because the word sort of got out that here were these young guys that could play slack key. And so some of the older guys would come out to check us out. Gabby Paino used to come down and have a few beers. And, the guitar would be in a stand. And, you know, I could hear me, you know, check out the tunings of the guitars. And he'd make some comments like, hey, you guys need to tune this one a little bit better, I think, you know. I should just pause a moment and say that, of course, we consider Gabby Pahinui to be the father of the Hawaiian slack key guitar. So it was really, you know, it's kind of special times. And we'd all sort of hang out after the shows and get into trouble in Waikiki and run around till really late and have a lot of fun. And those were the days. That's what we did. You know, we were musicians. We made a lot of wonderful friends and had some great times. Over the years, we kind of look back as that was really kind of a seminal time in the Renaissance of Hawaiian music.
You have such a knack for storytelling and music, which you've used in your productions. How did this talent first show itself?
In our family, the stories, you know, great legends of Hawaii were kind of an intrinsic part of our growing up. You know, this was our television, this was our radio, this was our everything, you know, the grandma's voice at night, you know, before we went to bed. And over the years, that had such a strong sort of influence on my life that I really tried to recreate these for other people. And so my work started getting into the performance of stage shows in Hawaii. I did this one called Here's Hawaii, which for many years really was the show to see on the island of Maui. And it had these characters, Hiiaka and Pele and Poliahu. And it was a Hawaiian theme-based show with really high-tech theatrical effects, lasers and that kind of thing. And then I just recently finished work on a show called Ulalena, with the Lahaina Myth and Magic Theater. And same thing. Now that show is the talk, the big buzz in Hawaii. And everybody who comes to Maui brings their family to go see Ulalana because it's, you know, from a cultural point of view, our music in terms of its acceptance by Westerners has been very disappointing. In other words, when I look at these great talented kids in Hawaii a couple years ago, where did they work? They were in luau shows, right? Working, you know, and these really kind of cut-and-paste productions and very sort of formulaic kind of ideas and things. Is that the best we can do for our people? Is that the best we can do for our culture? Is that the best we can do for, you know, our really talented entertainers and dancers and singers? I don't think so. You know, I think that we owe them more, you know. And part of the reason of my frustration has been the attitude of big companies in Hawaii, the big hotels. You know, I don't want to point to anyone in particular because they're all guilty. So, you know, we were thinking about this show on Maui and meeting in the boardroom of one of the hotels. We decided the only way we could do it was to not do it in a hotel. Because if I sat in a boardroom with the general manager of the hotel and said, I'd like to do a show based entirely in the Hawaiian language, they would ask me to leave. I mean, that's their concept of, and how dare we let general managers of hotels determine the cultural content of what we do? That's totally wrong. I mean, you know, the guy knows how to sell rooms, let him sell rooms. We know the Hawaiian culture, let us work on the show. So, I'm sorry, I'm really getting carried away here, but this has been a bugaboo of mine for so many years. So, you know, what we discovered was we can do it, and we can do it really exceptionally well. It's just we can't work with anybody in any hotel. You know, we've got to make a strong statement on our own. And that's what we did with Ulalana. We took it outside of the normal operation of things, and we built a theater, and we did the show, and it's really pretty remarkable to see. Very happy with the success of it. It's outstanding.
In my life I've traveled some, racing with the setting sun and flying through the sky. Golden cities by the bay, so many places far away that I have seen in my life. But there's a place that's always on my mind. Give me the sweet river flowing in Hanalei. Let me see the clouds moving from the bay. And give me that sweet river flowing in Hanalei. And I am going back again someday, back to that sweet river flowing in Hanalei. And waiting there for me someday. Traveling far away from home, I think of you sometimes. Even when I'm getting old, moving down along the road, well, it will be alright. 'Cause there's is a place that's always on my mind. Give me that sweet river flowing in Hanalei, where the kalo grows neath the mountain side. And give me the sweet river flowing in Hanalei, and I am going back again someday, back to that sweet river flowing in Hanalei, and waiting there for
Your wife Moana Lani is such a lovely hula dancer. How long have you been together?
We've been married for 15 years, and we work together, you know, we perform together. And so sometimes, you know, we have our own challenges. We were tired, or we've been, you know, at it for a whole bunch of days, and maybe you're not feeling well and rolling into another city to play music. And, you know, we have to be especially kind to each other, you know, during these times. But for husband and wife to work together in the music business, you know, it's wonderful. It's very rewarding. You know, we share a lot. So when we come home and you know, and our life sort of maybe gets back to normal a little bit, we have these great experiences that we can talk about and share. And, you know, if you have somebody to share your life with, it's pretty wonderful. So here, you know, it was the Spanish who introduced the guitar to Hawaii. So what I like about this next piece is it combines the sort of rhythmic ideas of the Spanish with the flavors of our own Hawaiian slide key guitar. And it's fun to play, too. Fun is important in music. Thank you.
return to Talk Story with Keola Beamer after your station identification.
Basically, I believe, and many Hawaiians do, that each human being is comprised of three levels. And the lowest level we call unihipili. And that is the sort of level of the unconscious mind. That's the part of you that can drive the car and still maintain an intelligent conversation with somebody. You're not really thinking about the mechanics of that. You're able to conduct a nice conversation and still drive the car. And then there's the uhane, that's the center part of human beings. That's the part of daily activity and daily life, and we go about most of our existence on this level. And then there's a very interesting higher part of each of us, and that we call aumakua. Now the aumakua level is where Hawaiians believe their ancestors reside, and that's where inspiration comes from. In terms of contemporary psychology, one could say that the unihipili is the subconscious, the uhane is the conscious, and the aumakua is the superconscious. So when we receive inspiration in our life, it's an energy that comes from that higher sort of level of existence. And to tap into that, which is what most writers do, no matter how, you know, what terms they give it or what kind of labels you give it, we all sort of feel that there's something greater than us out there. We all share that somehow, and some of us, you know, sort of fight it. We don't like labels. I mean, let's not use the word akua. Let's not use the word God, you know, whatever. But we know in our souls there's something bigger than us out there. And so when we can connect to this sort of positive flow of creative energy, we feed ourselves with this mana or this power that comes from that. And then you find yourself tapping into this beautiful creative flow of energy, and you become a part of it. And you have to learn to make room for it, to step aside from yourself. Hawaiians use the word ha'aha'a, and it means humility, to be humble. We all have a story to tell. You have the story of your life, I have the story of my life. And some of us, that story can get pretty loud in our own heads. You know, I did this, I did that, I went here, It's a lot of clutter, you know. It's a lot of baggage that we carry through life. And if we can quiet the story and just receive something else, it's a much more interesting existence. So in the morning when I wake up, I try to quiet the story. And I try to, the first word I say is mahalo, thank you. I'm glad to be here. And that's the first words that come out of my mouth. And And then I feel a little bit better about myself. So I think that's how that can help us connect and play music with aloha in our hearts. And place is important. One year I had a studio out, my wife will tell you, out on the, this is this most beautiful part of Maui, and it's kind of out on the balcony, and it's great. I mean, so beautiful, but I could never get anything done. You know, the whales would come by, and then at night there'd be the night divers, and then there'd be porpoises spinning, and all this, you know, stuff. I just could never compete with, I don't know how to describe it. I could never create because all this stuff was being created right in front of me, and I just couldn't handle it. So I'd end up just being constantly distracted and, you know, looking at the whales and singing to the moon, and pretty soon, you know, I got nothing done. So I need, you know, a chair, and I need like a wall or something, and I just need to work, you know. So my wife found that by putting me in a very small room and sliding the food under the door, that I might actually get something done once in a while. Got to have a little angst in there somehow, you know. Because can you compete with nature and with this beautiful part of the planet? I don't think so. In fact, all of Hawaiian music is really a celebration of that, you know. So we love this place so much that our music is a celebration of everything around us, plants, trees, the water, life forms. But we do it in an interesting way because sometimes there's, you know, a double meaning to everything, what we call kauna. So you can be singing about a beautiful flower, but you're really singing about a beautiful woman. So it makes our poetry a little bit kind of interesting.
Even when you're just fooling around, you can pick up the guitar and it sings for you, Keola. What are your musical influences?
For me, I just kind of don't... I mean, there are influences, there are wonderful influences in music all over the world. And you know, like I when I play in festivals in Europe or something, I get these great sort of influences from these artists. But it's information overload sometimes for me. It's too much, you know, and I can't assimilate all the stuff and put it in my heart and bring it forward again. So I kind of have to wall myself off a little bit. And so in a sense, I try not to listen to too much stuff. And you know, the sound of silence, very strange thing for a musician to say, that is the most beautiful sound in the world, quiet. And funny coming from a guy who makes airwaves move for a living, but... You know, you just appreciate the depth of quiet and the sound of nothing, you know. That's why I like space in music. I think the space between the notes are as important as the notes. So I like to sort of let those spaces happen naturally in my work because I think they're the most beautiful. You know, we talked earlier about the ability, learning the ability to step aside. You know, let this creative force happen, and you know, by trying to have some humility in your life, trying to have some respect for yourself and this great connection that we share with you know, the mana or life force that's all around us. And that's something that I think over time gets better if you understand it and try to work in that way, because I believe that makes a stronger connection with other human beings. And I'm so fortunate because I get this great email from all around the world about people who've made a connection with the music and about how it's helped them, how it's healed them, about how in hospice this music helped this person make a transition. Very powerful things. If ever I get depressed in my life, I just go through and remember some of the things that people said about how the music made the world a better place for them. So that's a pretty good reason to kind of hang around. And if I could use the analogy of flying an aircraft, when I was very young, I got my pilot's license, and so that's an analogy that makes sense to me. So you have, you know, these skills, and you understand the aircraft and how the engine works and how to make it take off, and you're using this part of your brain and your skills, and you get the plane up in the air, and then you reach this certain sort of level, and everything is going great, the plane is flying very smoothly, and then you step out of the cockpit, and then you go sit on the wing. That's what it's like to be there in that ether, in that beautiful ether, in that creative flow of energy. You're really not in control anymore. You're just letting it happen. And so you go to these great places, and you're sort of led to these wonderful ideas or concepts. But that's why artists say, writers say, it came through me. You know, how did you write this song? It came through me. How many times have you heard that? Quite a few. Because people understand that, you know, it's not entirely under their control.
That, I think, is a very profound lesson that I've just learned today talking to you, because I know the magic of music and how it transforms lives, because I know how your music transforms mine every time I listen to it. I'm moved deeply. Do you attribute your gift for composing to some spiritual source?
I didn't come there from religion or you know, a dogma kind of system. I discovered it from working, from trying to make music. So some of us use the analogy of a pyramid, right? Somebody goes up one side of the pyramid in a different manner, in a different religious system, different concept, and maybe I go up the other side. We're both going to the same point, you know, just with our own sort of training and system of making it work for us. But if you allow yourself to consider the fact that there are these beautiful forces in life and you can become a part of that just very easily, it's pretty remarkable. It's interesting when you work on something for a period of, let's say, 5 months, you know, you really have this closeness to it, and every waking moment is you're thinking about it, or you get up at 3 a.m. and you think, well, maybe I'll do this, or it becomes such an integral part of your life. Then when the record is finished and it's gone and you're not doing that anymore, it's sad for the artist. And I think a lot of artists know this feeling of separation where you've created something and now it's no longer in your hands, it's out there in the world, you can't play with it anymore. And that's good, because you know, you need to finish things and you need to have deadlines. But it's sad for a moment in time, you feel this separation. Almost like people say, songs are like children, I think. You know, you create them and then you let them go and they go out into the world and make their own way. So I'm sort of, you know, feeling a little missing it, even though it's, for other people, it's being heard for the first time. Funny, huh?
Thank you.
Makilina ke aloha. Aina ika e hue.
That is so amazing. You invented all of that, obviously.
Yeah. I just kind of try to expand the sort of boundaries of slack key a little bit, including the design of the guitar. Yeah, try to make it more kind of sonically alive. I mean, it's wonderful that the tunings themselves, you know, these open tunings have great coloration and wonderful texture, and it makes the guitar, the platform of the guitar, more alive. It kind of pushes the sound out a little bit more. And so you can get these great harmonics and things from the tunings that give it a great coloration and a nice sort of texture in the music. Good fun.
You designed that guitar?
With a German luthier. The idea is to just move the main brace up 5 or 6 inches so you get a little bit more soundboard. So now you got two, you know, holes on either side of the bout there. They're made out of Hawaiian woods, mm-hmm. Koa mostly, and mango sometimes. You know, the idea is that the instrument, it becomes a part of your life, and it's with you when you're sad, it's with you when you're happy, it's with you when you're struggling, it's with you when life is easy. And over time, we believe that the instrument gets a soul or personality of its own. And these guitars all have names because they all have a voice. You know, it's a different voice, each one. And if you've, you know, you are, they're so close to you. They're at your chest and during all these times, and you really begin to feel that they're a part of your life, a part of your soul. And if you've ever lost one, as I have, and as musicians who travel do, you occasionally lose an instrument. It tears you up. It's like losing a kid, you know, or a family member. That voice is gone forever. So, but, you know, they're very carefully handmade, and my sort of approach is it's got to be one. I don't like factory guitars. I don't like, you know, one guy making an end block and another guy making this and that. I like one man to totally focus on the instrument and make it from scratch, from a tree. So I found a guy to do that, and you know, we've been close friends ever since. You know, with a slack key, it was like, you know, we, as a culture, I mean, we didn't sit down and have a meeting or anything, but there was an evolution in the culture, and people began to realize this thing is dying. You know, it's a beautiful thing and it's dying. Why is it dying? Because we're holding it so close. So we began to discover that you have to hold the things you love with an open hand. And, you know, the Hawaiian culture is a beautiful, rich thing. And if we can just kind of let, you know, be true to it, but let it grow, let it go a little bit, you know, then good things happen. Now, the Hawaiian slack key guitar is not going to die. And there were some dark times when we really thought it would. But now, you know, I go to bed and I sleep pretty good. You know, I know that the records are out there and people are learning it. My website, kbeamer.com, you can download music. Adobe Acrobat files of the tablature and the music, real audio files of the way the piece should sound, directions, video, how to put your fingers on the fingerboard. And you can learn how to play slack key anywhere in the world, free, Mandawahi, you know, check it out. So I'll say that every day in Hawaii there's a feeling of thankfulness for being here. These beautiful islands, and so I'm not quite sure who to thank for that, but I'm just thankful. So this is my song about that feeling called Island Born.
Driving my car in the evening air, cruising down the road, I hear a voice on the radio singing music sweet. And winding through the valley to the windward side, seems like everything I see is somehow a part of me, and I am proud to be Ivan. I don't know where I'm going, and I got no place to be. Feeling grateful in my soul for this land called home, and so proud to be island born. From the mountain to the sea, so proud to be island born, island born. From the mountain to the sea, so proud to be
at sunrise on the mountain, moving o'er the trees, and I will lift my eyes to see this day you've given me, and I am proud to be island born. From the mountain to the sea, so proud to be island born. Island born. From the mountain to the sea, so proud to be island born.
KKCR would like to thank Hawaiian slack key master and Ohe recording artist Keola Beamer. For more information on Keola Beamer and Hawaiian slack key guitar, log on to www.kbeamer.com. Talk Story was produced by Mary Cunning and engineered by Dean Rogers in the studios of KKCR. The artist biography was written by Charlene Dyer and narrated by Noel Brooks. Keola Beamer was interviewed by Manulele Clark. For more information on KKCR, you can log on to www.kkcr.org. Ahui ho, until we meet again.